The state Senate is debating a sweeping police reform bill this afternoon after several procedural delays last week. Among the proposals, limits on the use of force by law enforcement, changes to what's called qualified immunity for police officers, and the creation of a new independent entity to certify and decertify officers. Shortly, we'll have an update on the debate live from the State House, but first, what do police officers think of the bill? We're joined by the president of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association, Larry Calderoni. He's been on the Boston Police since 1994. Thanks for taking the time to join us today, Officer Calderoni.
I appreciate the time. Thank you very much for having me, Ms. Deering.
So I'd like, Officer, to start with the big picture. What sparked this current push for change was the killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police in May. I want to start by asking for your reaction to that incident, and do you think this is a time for policing reform?
Well, I'll answer both questions. Thank you. Let's start with the horrible actions that took place in Minneapolis. I've said it time and time again on different shows and being questioned. You don't have to be a police officer to know what happened in Minneapolis is horrible and wrong. Luckily, in Massachusetts, we haven't experienced anything close to this, nor do I think we will. We are extremely well-trained, very well-educated, and again, it's a tragedy what happened out there, and we should not be painted with the same brush here in Massachusetts as they are in other parts of the country. But it was a horrible act.
So do you feel that by pursuing police reform here in the Commonwealth, that the police officers here in the Commonwealth are being painted with the same brush as those in Minneapolis?
I don't think that the legislation itself is painting us with the same brush. I look at it from a different standpoint. This is not the first conversation that's happened on Beacon Hill with so-called police reform. I'm formerly the legislative director for the Patrolmen's Association, and I was working on Beacon Hill on matters such as this. I look at Massachusetts, Boston specific, but I will go on the record for the whole Commonwealth. I believe that Massachusetts has the best policing in the country. And I know everyone says that, depending what geographical location you're speaking in. But I make that claim after being a police officer for 25 years. And I work side by side with the best men and women that policing could exemplify. And when I talk about police reform, as good as we are, there's always room for improvement. And that's the message we've been carrying on Beacon Hill, not only in the last several months, but in the last several years, again, in my time up there as the legislative director.
Us about that. What is the room for improvement? What improvement do you see room for among officers and in policing reform?
Well, I look at some of the current requests from the Black and Latino Caucus. If you don't know, my organization, for the first time in its history, had a closed-door meeting with the Black and Latino Caucus from the legislature a couple of different times. They were very constructive. And what we did talk about were some uniform standards and training guidelines for the entire Commonwealth. And that's not a bad thing.
You talked about the fact that you don't want police in the Commonwealth to be painted with the same brush and that the things that happened to George Floyd haven't happened here. How do you square that with the number of people who were repeatedly in the streets in Boston saying that they had a different experience with police officers in the Commonwealth, police officers in Boston as well, and that reforms were necessary for them to feel safe and to trust law enforcement in their communities?
Well, I'm not going to second guess how numerous people in the streets are classifying their interaction with the police officer. I could deal with them on a case-by-case basis specifically if I have knowledge of them. But I'll say this, if people felt that they had a negative experience with the police officer, then there are avenues to discuss that. There are avenues to proceed with complaints. But you mentioned the people in the street specifically over the behavior starting on May 31st. I would tell you that there is a prime example of how well-trained police officers are in the Commonwealth. We had to ask for mutual aid from surrounding communities all the way through the state police and the National Guard. And it's the first time that I think we can proudly say that even to this day, with all of the standouts and protests that we're used to in Boston dating back through the 70s, this is the first time that I don't recall or having anybody bring to my attention any protester that went to the hospital claiming police brutality. And that is contrary. We had 9 police officers in Boston that night that needed to be hospitalized. So zero on the protesters' side would tell me that police officers did an outstanding job in light of what was happening that night, from rocks and bottles and these makeshift cement bottles that were being thrown at us, fireworks, etc. Everybody knows what happened. And I think the men and women that night did a great job.
So a couple of things there. Just I want to be clear that here on Radio Boston, we've been careful to distinguish between peaceful protests that happened on the day that you're talking about and an outbreak that happened in the downtown crossing area that night. In addition, I'm anxious to move on to the legislation, and we've covered the protests extensively here on Radio Boston and WBUR. So let's turn our attention here to the legislation today. I want to ask you, what pieces, I know there are a couple of serious concerns from the Patrolmen's Association about the bill. We'll get to those in a moment. Before that, I want to ask you, are there pieces of the bill you support and want to see advanced?
Sure, there are. And you'll have to forgive me, as I know there's 72 pages worth of material there. But we agree to some of the positions that are in the bill. We understand, like I said, the uniform standards and training guidelines that they want to put forth. We understand the request for the what's called the POSIC board. That would be an oversight panel made up of non-law enforcement personnel and law enforcement personnel. They would be charged with the duty of coming up with these standards and these guidelines. They would work with the Massachusetts Police Training Council on coming up with different educational matters on many different topics that would be uniform across the Commonwealth. We support that. We support pieces in the bill that talk about non-discharging weapons at moving vehicles, where there's excessive force material, there's a duty to intervene material, there's language about increased diversity throughout police organizations in the Commonwealth. We agree with all of those topics. It's the few pieces that seem to be of greater concern to us that may be costly to law enforcement and the general public as a whole. That's
my understanding. Sorry, Officer Calderoni, we've got a little delay, so sometimes I'm interrupting you without meaning to. My understanding is that the two places where the rubber really meets the road on this bill for the Patrolmen's Association is the certification process for officers and also the qualified immunity adjustments that are in the proposed bill. Am I correct that those are the two sticking points primarily?
No, I apologize, Tiziana. The one about the certification is not a concern of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association. Currently, we are trained through the Boston Police Academy. We follow the guidelines of the Mass Police Training Council. We are all certified and licensed through the City of Boston when we graduate from the Police Academy. The certification process that would be put in place by the panel still has a ways to go, and I would call that a work in progress, not only with the Black and Latino Caucus and our organization, but also the members of the Senate, members of the governor's office, the governor himself, and members of the House of Representatives, which will be taking that up next. You are
and
correct.
I apologize. I meant to actually talk about the certification board. I do understand there was some concern about what the legislation proposes for the makeup of the board. I apologize. I misspoke.
Not a problem. That would be correct. So why don't I do this? Why don't I tell you the three topics that are of concern? Because you did have qualified immunity as one of them. Due process,
yes,
the other, and the makeup of the panel would be the third. Those are our three focuses of concern at the moment.
And what is your concern on the makeup of the panel?
The makeup of the panel that came out of the governor's office, again, was non-law enforcement and law enforcement. In the governor's version, it seemed to be a little too top-heavy on management. There were 7 non-law enforcement seats, and there were 7 law enforcement seats, 6 of which would be considered management. And that was concerning to us, because when you're creating a panel that's going to set standards, guidelines, trainings, have investigatory power to certify and decertify, when you're talking about an overhaul of the public safety system and policing as we know it, who better to be involved in those decision-making processes than the offices that represent the men and women on the street every day that are answering these calls for service? It would be crazy.
Officer, as I understand it, As the legislation is written now, the board will be 13 members. Six of them will be in law enforcement. The rest will be nominated from organizations like the NAACP, ACLU, Massachusetts Black and Latino Caucus, et cetera. So what in that makeup are you seeking to see changed?
We're seeking to see change on the management side, on the law enforcement side. On the non-law enforcement side, we believe that it should be experts in the field. And although we know we're not going to be in charge of who is going to be named to the panel, we believe we should be treated just like all other panels for certifications and decertifications. When you look at physicians and lawyers, nurses, teachers, those panels that oversee those professions, those are all experts in the field. More than 70% of the physicians panel or the attorneys boards that oversee attorneys, more than 70% are experts in the field. Surely we're not going to decertify a doctor or a lawyer made up of a bunch of community activists or people that are not professionals in the field. Why would policing
Officer,
be any different?
What of the pushback that the situation here is different because this panel would be put together during a time of reform and therefore would need more people who have been affected by previous history and have more voice than we might do if we were not enacting a certification and decertification panel during a time of reform?
Well, I would actually think that we'd be putting this panel together on an unbiased point of view. We would be looking to decertify and take police officers off the street that don't belong there. Let me share with you that there's nothing worse for a good policeman than a bad police officer. Nobody wants to work next to a bad police officer. But again, we want to take an unbiased approach. I would not want to put a panel of overseers in power that had a poor experience with a police officer or have some hidden bias as to why they want to make a decision. Just like doctors and lawyers oversight panels, we want experts in the field to take an independent, educated approach as to the facts of the case. We don't want people that had negative experiences in the operating room that are going to come and judge the physicians as a whole. They're obviously going to be biased in their opinion. So again, why would we judge police officers any differently?
We're going to have to go soon, and I want to make sure before we do, Officer, that we get to concerns about qualified immunity. Just for our listeners, that's the legal doctrine that shields government officials, including police officers, from being civilly liable or from being sued for actions taken on the job, except in extreme circumstances. And this bill would limit that qualified immunity so that officers would be shielded, quote, only if, quote, no reasonable defendant could have had reason to believe that such conduct would violate the law, end quote. I understand you think these proposed changes are too strong. Are you open to some change to the status of qualified immunity here in the Commonwealth?
So it's interesting that somebody would say that I think they're too strong. Let me go on the record as telling you that I have never given that opinion or that quote. My issue and the issue of police officers I represent is that qualified immunity is an extremely complex judicial doctrine that even the legislators themselves don't understand. I've been working the phone for the past several days with members of the Law Enforcement Policy Group. That group represents 16,000 uniform officers and correction officers across the Commonwealth. It's a very large group. And we've been calling virtually every senator that will take our call. And each senator has a different understanding of what qualified immunity actually does. And as we explain to them that it's been developed over the last 30 years throughout the court system, it's been appealed, it's been granted, it's been appealed, we get different answers depending on different judges and different levels of court systems that you go through. But yet our legislature, even though they don't understand it, wants to hurry up and pass a bill in the next several days, changing qualified immunity as we know it, and they cannot be articulate and correct on whether or not it will have a better effect, a worse effect. Is it going to hurt the general public? Another falsehood that people don't understand, probably people that are listening to us right now, is that qualified immunity actually exists and was put in place to protect from false litigation and false claims against municipalities and all public employees. I stress all.
I want to stop you there, Officer, because I want to go back to the first part of your point. We had a representative of the ACLU of Massachusetts on our air last week talking about qualified immunity, and he said that The way it has played out, it is tantamount to complete immunity for law enforcement officers from civil liability. Is that appropriate? And any understanding of the concern? I mean, this is qualified immunity is being pushed back on all over the country right now, at the federal level, at local levels, in different states. Do you understand the concern and the pushback that that level of shield can breach trust and also put citizens potentially at harm?
Well, I can understand that level of security, absolutely, because right now the only officials that I'm aware of in the Commonwealth that receive absolute immunity, as you say it, are judges in the courtroom, DAs in the courtroom, and the actual legislators themselves. It's the elected officials up at the State House that actually enjoy absolute immunity. Qualified immunity, again, is only granted by the judge when a public employee, it's not only for police officers. This is for all public employees, the town assessor, the building inspector, the nurses, the doctors, the teachers, people that work throughout our entire society for municipalities or government. Those are public employees, and all of them.
Although certainly the town assessor doesn't have the same kind of power and immediate sway, for example, that a law enforcement officer does.
See, so that's the misconception that's being brought out there, is that the actual assessor, he is granted or she is granted qualified immunity by the judge when they're acting as an agent for the government that employs them. And again, it shields them from financial burden as well as the community that employs them. This is not something that shields a bad police officer. Qualified immunity only affects a police officer in the court when they are acting within the scope of their duties. If they violate the law, if they commit a felony, they are not granted qualified immunity. And contrary to what some of our Congress people are actually saying publicly, qualified immunity does not stop you from suing a police officer. Police officers are sued when they do something wrong. It happens, unfortunately, because every place has officers that do things wrong, and all professions have people that do things wrong. And if we violate the law as police officers, we're charged criminally, and if we're found guilty, like every other citizen in the Commonwealth, we go to jail and we pay the penalty. We're not granted qualified immunity.
We are out of time. We're actually, in fact, way past our time. I just want to let listeners know we're going to have a legal analyst, WBUR legal analyst, Judge Nancy Gertner, to kind of walk us through how the law works on this tomorrow, and we will keep following this story. I appreciate your time today, Officer Larry Calderoni, the president of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Daring. Appreciate it. Thank you.
And again, listeners, we will continue to follow this story. We've been speaking with activists making the case for change. Today we heard a police point of view. We will continue to bring you perspectives as this story unfolds. Right now, we want to get some quick reaction and the latest from Beacon Hill, where WBUR Senior Statehouse reporter Steve Brown is. Steve, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Tiziana. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Not too bad. Been watching the Senate here on my little TV screen. They're in a little recess right now. Maybe they took a pause to listen to the show. I don't know.
So what have you been seeing, Steve? Yeah.
They are now moving forward here. They're starting to go through the amendments. As you know, they were hoping to do this on Thursday to try to get through this bill. And, of course, the big sticking point, there are disagreements on a number of different things, but the big one is this qualified immunity, which Officer Calderoni was talking about, you and he were discussing, and that seems to be the big hang-up. The supporters of the reform movement seem to think that having removed or lessened so that a police officer could be charged civilly if they're found to be breaking the law is a key component of this bill. The police unions last week urged their members to call the Senate and to support amendments that would soften that language. So there was the 3-day hang-up there where they used parliamentary procedures to stop the debate. So the debate was supposed to be on Thursday. They put it off to Friday. It didn't happen Friday. They put it off to Saturday. And now finally we're here, and it is starting to move forward. They haven't got to those meatier amendments yet. There, I believe there are 7 amendments that would change the way the law is written about the qualified immunity.
Steve, did you hear, you heard Officer Calderoni just now on air. Is he making similar arguments to what you're hearing state senators make on Beacon Hill? And what has the tone of that debate been today?
Sure. The tone, they're getting back to being their usual collegial self. A lot of the debate didn't take place. The debate was taking place behind closed doors and in caucus. And I've heard that this was a big wedge issue in the Senate. The members don't like to be on different pages on things. They like to pass consensus bills where basically the tally is lopsided, 39-0, 40-0. They like everybody to be in agreement. They're not going to be there on some of these amendments. Some of these amendments are going to be very close. And I think, I was hearing from the senators, they were quite upset about the fact that they were having such strong disagreements over this. Senator Dean Tran of Fitchburg spoke earlier today to that.
We have in front of us a divisive and politically driven piece of legislation aimed to divide us even more. Look at what it is doing to this Senate and imagine what it will do to our state.
So again, like I say, the senators really pride themselves in getting along and not being split on things. And this was tearing them apart over the weekend. It seems from what I'm hearing that the votes are going to be close on some of these amendments, but the fact that they're moving forward with it indicates that they may have the votes to approve the amendments that would make those changes to the qualified immunity.
So, Steve, early last week, supporters of this bill said they wanted to pass it by the end of the week, last week. You're saying sure. That there's some movement today. Is this a bill that is going to pass in the state Senate? Do we know?
I think it will pass in the Senate. They definitely will come up with something. The fact that they're starting to move through this today, I'm hearing that they do want to get it done and get it done today. Time is of the essence here because they have to get everything done by July 31st. They have to get it to the governor's desk. They'd actually like to get it done sooner than that in case the governor issues a veto or suggests some amendments or things like that. They still need to build in that buffer if there are any changes that the governor might make, that they can go back and either uphold it or override it.
And then, Steve, what comes next? I mean, there are several steps in getting a bill passed and making it law, and time is running out.
Yeah, I'm hearing that probably in the next couple of days, we will be hearing a version from the House. They will come up with their version. Of course, last month, the governor put out a version. Now this is the Senate's version. And then we'll be getting the House's version. They will go through it. I'm hearing it's going to be a little more watered down than what the Senate is trying to do. So you're going to have 2 different versions of the bill. There will be a conference committee. And the way things work around here, that July 31st deadline, and sometimes they use it as a cudgel to, it's this or nothing. You got to go with it. You take it or leave it. They use that date, that cutoff date, as a way to force the other branch to concede to that. So what happens in conference remains to be seen. That'll probably play out the last week of July.
All right. And that is WBUR Senior Statehouse reporter Steve Brown. Steve, we'll look forward to talking to you again. I know we're both going to, our show and you are going to continue to track this. Thank you.
Thank you, Tiziana.